Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. I am worked up. It is a Thursday live in Los Angeles. Doing my own hair. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio. Yes, we're back in studio right here, FS1, Sirius XM Channel 83. It is great to have you. And Joy Taylor is joining me. We came back to the studio tomorrow. You can smell the antiseptic. We are getting our temperatures checked in the parking garage before we're allowed to come up. There's masks everywhere. Even the croissants and the cereals are social distancing. I feel safer here than I've ever felt in my life, to be honest with you. Big, vast studio. Joy is joining me again. Joy, it's great to be here. I'm all worked up today, Joy.
Yes, you are very fired up. It seems to be similar topics that kind of stick with you.
So I am, I think when you think of me, you think there's a guy that fights injustice. That's always been my brand. I'm like a superhero without any powers, right? That's how I see myself. Batman, by the way, for the record, didn't have any powers either. He just had a big budget. I'm Batman without the butler and without the longtime companion. Make of that what you will. But the point being is Batman was a bat. He couldn't even fly. He was the only bat on the planet that couldn't fly. Batman couldn't do anything. He had a good budget. I got a decent budget. So I'm going to fight injustice today. That is my new brand. I am the superhero with no powers. Russell Wilson got hosed again. So Pro Football Focus, used to like him, came out with their the best players of the decade. This isn't a small injustice either. So from 2010 to 2020, the best players of the decade. And Tom Brady's number one. Not a big argument there. Aaron Donald's two. You're not getting a lot of arguments. Drew Brees is three, Richard Sherman four, Gronk five, Aaron Rodgers, Von Miller, Julio Jones, J.J. Watt, Luke Kuechly, Joe Thomas, Chris Harris. That's interesting. Evan Mathis, a guard. Harrison Smith. Patrick Willis hasn't played in 6 years. Oh, Russell Wilson's 33rd. A guard made it over him. Calvin Johnson never won a playoff game and retired early. Patrick Willis, several spots ahead, retired 6 years ago. Didn't play half the decade. A safety? Four of them. Four safeties. It's interesting. Rob Gronkowski missed 45 games in the decade and was hobbled, was a shell of himself for the last 3 years of the decade. Russell Wilson is not even the top Seahawk. Richard Sherman is ahead of him. Not even Earl Thomas is ahead of him. Oh, good hell. Marshawn Lynch is ahead of him. He's the fourth best Seahawk. Seattle, it should be noted before Russell Wilson, and I'm from Seattle, team I grew up with, was irrelevant before he arrived. They're the most known thing about the Seahawks. Was Bosworth getting run over by Bo Jackson. That was like their thing, right? That's what you, when you thought of Seattle. The King Dome and Russell, Bos getting run over. They were known for great fans and cool uniforms. That was before Russell Wilson. Now, they are known as a top five franchise. Well, Pete Carroll showed up 2 years before Russell and had two losing seasons. This ain't a Pete Carroll thing. Pete Carroll was there before, 2 years before. 7-9, 7-9. Seattle was still irrelevant. They just had a famous coach. And a good running back, and a good defense, not denying it. But Seattle now is one of five really elite franchises that seem to win every year. New England, Green Bay, the Saints, Baltimore. You get into that kind of Pittsburgh, Seattle. But Baltimore's had down years. We think Pittsburgh mostly has underachieved. And why doesn't New Orleans win those big games late? Really, New England, do you know this, is the only team this decade with more playoff wins than Seattle. New England, that's it. You think Earl Thomas is the reason for that? Maybe I should ask his brother. I hear they're tight. Anywho, I love Drew Brees. You know I love Drew Brees. First ballot Hall of Famer. I call him a top eight quarterback of all time. I get pushback. In this decade, Drew Brees has 4 playoff wins. Russell Wilson has 9. Drew Brees had 4 losing seasons in the decade. That's 4 more than Russell Wilson. And Russell didn't even play the entire decade, but yet Matt Ryan is ahead of him here. Matt Ryan's had 4 losing seasons. Matt Ryan's had 2 seasons in his career, passer rating over 100. Russell Wilson's career passer rating is over 100. Matt Ryan went 4-12. Russell's never in his life going to have a 4-12 season. Hasn't had even like a bad season. College, NC State, college, Wisconsin, pro, Seattle. 32 NFL GMs, including the one in Atlanta. If Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan were available, would take Russell. Russell's the better passer. Russell's the better athlete. Russell's the better playmaker. Russell makes something out of nothing. Russell can win with bad O-lines. Matt Ryan is overwhelmed with bad O-lines. And I like Matt Ryan. I consider him a top 10 quarterback. And I love Drew Brees. I consider him a first ballot Hall of Famer. You got to be kidding me. You know what it tells me about this? Pro Football Focus should not be working from home. Pro Football Unfocused is what I'm calling it this morning. I will give them next hour a chance to fight for their case. This is absurd. And I've said it before. Russell Wilson is the best football player in the world today. He's not the tallest, doesn't have the best arm. IQ, leadership, playmaking. Russell Wilson literally does things we can't explain. 8 years. Why doesn't he ever get hit? Lamar Jackson's faster, gets hit. Carson Wentz, bigger, stronger, gets hit. Mahomes last year, gets hit. Russell Wilson does stuff nobody can explain. He never gets hit. He runs backwards, he runs sideways, he runs forward, he faces the Niners twice a year, he faces Aaron Donald twice a year. He never gets hit. You can't even explain stuff he does. Russell Wilson, 33rd, 4th Seahawk, best player of the decade. And you wonder, I fight injustice. I am now Batman without the butler. I am fighting this cause. I'm not letting it go. It's ridiculous. And he's the only player on this list I've seen so far that in the last 2 days was rumored to be traded 2 years ago to the Cleveland Browns, and his team wants to bring Cam Newton in as a backup. What? It's incredible to me. We do this all the time, is that if you don't look like everybody else looks like, we don't know what to make of you. It's kind of weird. Russell's not the prototypical. This is Lamar Jackson. I'm guilty of it. I'm like, he runs more than he passes, but I didn't consider great coach, great owner, great personnel department, and the league's changing. The running thing works now. You got to kind of run. So, Pro Football Focus. Russell Wilson. Gronk missed 45 games in the decade, hobbled his last 3 years, is 5. Calvin Johnson, Evan Mathis, Patrick Willis. These are good players. I'm not denying it. Russell's below all of them. Never forget, Seattle was, and I'm from there, was an irrelevant franchise known for cool uniforms, Boz getting run over, great fans. Pete Carroll had a losing record in Seattle. If Russell Wilson isn't drafted, Pete's not in the NFL, not in Seattle. He was getting one more year. They were paying him too much. Pete's career, NCAA baggage at USC, NFL, he'd already been fired twice, 2 losing seasons. If he didn't draft Russell Wilson, has Matt Flynn, he has a 3rd losing season, he's done. He's now a legend. Okay. That's just where I'm starting today. And I'm in a good mood. You know what? What do they say? Not all heroes wear capes. You know, I just wear a sports shirt.
Somewhere button down.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I don't buy into the garage band theory that, you know, we just didn't get breaks or we're not sellouts. The bottom line is U2, Jay-Z, Beyonce, yeah, they sell out everything because they're really good. If you have talent in America, we'll find you. You will be found. Carson Wentz. You know, you start looking at these guys, T.O., where did T.O. go to college? You know, Carson Wentz is playing in the Dakotas. It doesn't matter. If you're good, you're going to end up getting drafted. And if you're really good, you're going to get drafted in the first round. I don't believe in this whole, you know, I was really talented, but I never got a break. There's too much money in America. We are the nation of 220 countries in the world. We're the place for capitalists. There's just too much money in music. There's too much money in football. There's too much money in finance. There's too much money in medicine. We'll find you. You're great. We'll find you. And now with YouTube, you don't even need a budget. You can just have your grandma tape you, put it on YouTube, and we'll find you. The days of sleepers are over. People will find you. And so, and even if you're at a small place, there'll be a buzz about you. You'll hear a buzz. Oh, there's this kid down. There's this magician. There's this entertainer. So Cliff Kingsbury is the latest coach to talk about Jared Stidham. He just goes on and on about Jared Stidham. I recruited him. Oh, my Lord. Tremendous thrower of the football. Really comes out clean. Watched him at 16. Ball jumped out of his hand. Very accurate. Cool. Calm. Doesn't try too hard around the guys. He's a natural leader. And I'm like, all right, so let me ask you this. Bill Belichick watched him all year. Tom Brady is now old and expensive. Wouldn't Belichick have said, why are we waiting for Brady? We got Stidham. The Colts bailed on Peyton Manning, and Andrew Luck was still a college player. Bill Belichick, after Tom Brady won a Super Bowl versus Atlanta, had Jimmy Garoppolo. Brady was better then, younger then, and had just been the MVP of the Super Bowl. And Belichick was ready to move off him for Garoppolo. Brady's now older, off his worst season in years, and Belichick's like, is Tom going to resign? We got space for Tom. We'll keep Tom. Belichick watched him the whole year. He watched them every practice. He didn't blow him away. Listen, it's not like Jarrett Stidham played in the sticks. He played at Auburn. It's in the SEC. He beat Alabama. The game got a massive rating. We knew who Jarrett Stidham was. We watched Jarrett Stidham. He threw for 18 touchdowns at Auburn. Auburn's got NFL offensive linemen, NFL running backs, NFL tight ends, NFL. It's Auburn, for God's sakes. The top 10, 12 program in the country. Maybe top 8. They beat Bama regularly. Nobody else does except Clemson. So it's Auburn. We watched them 2 years. When he got drafted in the fourth round, were we outraged? We barely even mentioned it. It wasn't even mentioned. Now, perhaps he's a late bloomer, but the idea, I keep hearing about all these insiders talking about how great he is, and my thing is, Belichick watched him for a year and still sat around hoping Tom Brady signed. Belichick, when Garoppolo got drafted, the first year there was buzz about him. The first camp there was buzz about him. The first preseason there was buzz about him. People were into Jimmy Garoppolo. So much so, Tom Brady went to the owner and said, get him out of here. Brady, there was no buzz about Jared Stidham. As an old, struggling Tom Brady, we didn't even suggest Stidham should play. So I never bought into the garage band that just didn't get a break. I don't, you know, like it's like comedy. Oh, this guy was really funny. He never got a break. It's too much money in comedy. Dave Chappelle was 20. He was 20. And Mel Brooks put him in a lead role for a movie. At 20, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Bill Maher, they're killing it. At like 23, they're agents everywhere. Tiger Woods had an agent at 11. Like, I hope Jared Stidham works. But there's not even a buzz about it. Belichick wanted Brady back. I don't buy it. I want to see it. And by the way, I could argue they have the worst weapons in the league. He's going to elevate those. I don't buy it. And I hope the kid works. I mean, you don't want to see New England be unwatchable. They already have a conservative system. a conservative system, no weapons, and a bad quarterback is terrible football. I love Belichick, the best coach I've ever seen. But when insiders start telling me about somebody and there's no buzz all these years in, a guy that played in the SEC against Alabama, and I think he one of the years he beat Alabama, and he got drafted in the fourth round, and we were like, yeah, that's about where he is. Maybe he's the world's latest bloomer at quarterback. But, I mean, I can remember very early with Lamar Jackson, very early in college, people are being like, oh, that's Michael Vick. Oh, my God. Oh, Lord. And people started arguing about him. He's good. No, he's overrated. He's good. He's overrated. If they're arguing about you, there's a buzz about you. Like, that means half the people are like, wow. And half the people are like, oh, overrated. There's not even arguments about Jared Stidham. Nobody's like, there's no pro Jared Stidham or anti Jared Stidham camp because there's no buzz. And I just kind of tend to believe if you got it, we'll find it. We'll hear about it if you're not playing.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I saw this where there's a story out that Tua should compete for the Miami Dolphins starting job right now, as long as the medical staff in Miami clears him. One of the reasons I think Tua is the best prospect in this draft is because a lot of what he does, you can't really explain. It's not quantifiable. And when you get people like that, and we have examples of it, it usually becomes great. Let me give you three examples. The first one we've talked about, Russell Wilson. How come he never gets hit? He runs like Lamar Jackson. He runs like Carson Wentz. 8 years in the NFL. He never gets hit. You can't really explain it. He runs backwards. You're not supposed to do that. He runs. He's shorter than you're supposed to. He never gets hit. There's an instinct with him that nobody else has. Even Lamar doesn't have it. Wentz doesn't have it. Steve Young didn't have it. He never gets hit. When you can't explain it, it's special. Let me give you a second one. Mariano Rivera. He had one pitch. For 20 years, he had one pitch. It was a cutter. Nobody could hit it. He got old. The pitch got slower. Nobody could hit it. You can't explain it. There's nobody in baseball that has one pitch. He had one, and he's the most unhittable closer of all time. Batters knew it was coming. As he got older, it got slower. He had one pitch, and it was often better against the better hitters. You can't explain it. That's special. Let me give you another. Dennis Rodman. 6'7" skinny guy is the all-time best rebounder in league history. How's that possible? He played in an era with Akeem and Shaq and big 7-foot centers. And this skinny guy was the best rebounder? What? That doesn't make any sense. Wasn't like he was the strongest. He wasn't the tallest. He wasn't the best jumper. He wasn't the most powerful. He hustled, but lots of guys hustled. Larry Bird hustled. A lot of guys jumped into the stands. How is Dennis Rodman the best rebounder ever? You can't quantify it. Russell Wilson, Mariano Rivera, Dennis Rodman. When you can't qualify it, it's called special. And those people usually become great. Mark Sanchez on the other day. Mark Sanchez, good college player, good, you know, NFL, had some success. Watch his film. This is what he does. And he tried to explain Tua, and he couldn't really explain some of it.
Sometimes he can't even articulate what he did on film, and it leaves you scratching your head because it's so good and so fast and so instinctive. You're like, well, how did you know that? And he can't really get the words out. Like, he doesn't even know. It's almost like he's processing what's happening physically in front of him. And in those nanoseconds, his body's already reacting. He's already making decisions that he didn't even know he could make that quickly, and he can't even talk about it. So I was like, what the heck is that? How did you know? And, I mean, it's just, it's uncanny the way he does stuff like that. So it's almost like he's mentally twitchy. That's crazy. I've never been around anybody like that.
Yeah, that's why I think he's special. I think you can explain Joe Burrow. You can explain Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert's a 4-point student, big, strong kid, family was athletes, got a cannon for an arm, and he had a really good offensive line in college. I think Joe Burrow wasn't great until he got a great team around him. He's a good distributor of the football when he has protection, time, and good receivers. Tua, a lot of stuff I can't explain. He's not very big, doesn't have a great arm, doesn't have a huge arm. He's not real big. He's actually, people will tell you, he's not even that great of an athlete. But why was he the number one high school quarterback in the country? He was undersized, didn't have a rocket arm, wasn't a super athlete. Huh? Don't you have to be great at one of those things? Like John Elway, you were like, oh my God, what an arm. Trevor Lawrence, size, arm. What is it? It's the unexplainable, and that usually becomes great. I can explain Patrick Mahomes. His dad played in the majors. Guy's got a ridiculous arm. He's an all-time arm talent. He also has great weapons and one of the great play designers ever. I can explain the whole Patrick Mahomes thing. I can explain Carson Wentz, 6'5", rocket arm, throws from angles, tough kid, really athletic. I can explain it. I can explain Michael Jordan. I mean, I can explain Michael Jordan. Huge hands, allowed him to palm it, a relentless work ethic, and competitive to the point of strange. And by the way, had a 40-inch vertical, big hands, super quick. He had big hands but not huge feet, allowed him to be really quick and shifty. I can explain everything. Magic Johnson, he was a 6'9½ point. There were no 6'9½ points. He was just so much bigger than everybody, and he had the butt, and he backed in, and he had great court vision, and he worked on his game. And he was still at the very end, not a great shooter and not a great defender, but I could explain it. Also happens, he inherited Kareem. That helped. But, when we can't explain you, and there's, Mariano Rivera, it's hard to explain. A lot of guys threw the cutter. Dennis Rodman, a lot of guys hustled. A lot of 6'7½ guys hustled. Well, he was skilled. Not really. Couldn't shoot. I don't know how to explain it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Via the Coward Global Satellite Network, let's bring on the Claster, Joel Klatt. Fresh off.
What's going on, man?
Man, I'm all worked up supporting Russell Wilson. By the way, when he was at Wisconsin, you're like an encyclopedia for college football. Mm-hmm. Do you remember Russell? I remember him at NC State. Do you remember how he changed Wisconsin football for a year? Do you remember?
Yeah. Go back 100%. To that point, now we've seen it broken, it seems like, every single year. But remember, Colin, to that point, that was the most efficient college football season we've ever seen from a quarterback. He set the QBR standard or rating standard for the history of college football in one season. He went in there and was a captain right away. He is the reason, the catalyst, why this graduate transfer rule has become so in vogue throughout college football because of what happened at Wisconsin. And they almost went and won the Rose Bowl. Remember, it was the great TCU team with Andy Dalton. I think Tank Carter was a linebacker that actually beat them in the Rose Bowl. Or else they would have been Rose Bowl champions. That was a really good football team. And the reason was Russell Wilson. It was a fascinating year.
So I was told a couple of days ago that expect the Pac-12 at least to play a condensed Pac-12 schedule. No traveling, no out of conference, no out of region. It is going to be condensed if they can get it in the fall. And with California's legislators, governor, mayor of LA, we're not sure that's true. Your thought on games being played just regionalized, Big Ten versus Big Ten, SEC versus SEC. How's that land for you?
Okay, so the first thing is nothing has been decided firmly, and they're talking about all sorts of situations and plans for the season. I think I would start with this, Colin, and I want to make this abundantly clear. I absolutely believe there will be college football this fall in some capacity. There's no doubt in my mind. It's going to happen. Now, what it looks like, then we get into this minutia. What does it look like? Are we just going to do conference schedules? I've heard every commissioner and a lot of ADs talk about trying to get to those conference schedules right away when the weather is warm and when they feel like they have a window of opportunity early in the season to potentially play just conference teams. Like you said, it would reduce the amount of travel. The hard part with that is that there is some large revenue games that are scheduled right now in the non-league. So, and in particular, Notre Dame is out there looking at their ACC schedule with their scheduling partnership and what they could possibly do outside of this. Now, I want to go back to where you initially started, which is the Pac-12. And you talked about they were talking about condensed schedules and so on and so forth. I want to be very clear about this. Larry Scott does not have the political capital to get that conference to behave as one. Okay, so what's going to happen in the Pac-12, if there's a conference that is most likely to be fractured, one school playing in one state against some other team, regardless of what's going on elsewhere in the conference, it will be the Pac-12. In fact, I've been told by multiple sources that the ADs have had conversations behind the conference's back that would tell each other, listen, if we're unable to play via a mayor's ruling, a state governor's ruling, you guys go ahead and look out for yourself. And in fact, some of the ADs in states that really believe that they will have football have offered, specifically the California schools, and some have offered even the Oregon schools, the chance to come play home games in their state. So if we make any sort of assertion about what we think that this is going to look like, I think we would be jumping way ahead of where they're at in the process right now, because everything's on the table in the Pac-12. And make no bones about it, the ADs are the one driving that bus, because Larry Scott does not have the political capital to get them to all behave as one.
So I was saying this earlier. I don't believe in these garage bands that just never got a break. It doesn't matter. The Beatles weren't even from here. U2's not from here. If you're talented today, America finds you and compensates you. Ricky Gervais is not from here. We found him and we love him. I don't buy that Jarrett Stidham is this secret sauce. He got drafted in the fourth round. Nobody was outraged. He played at a massive power with NFL guys everywhere. He beat Alabama. And now all these football insiders are like, ooh, he's special. Oh, he's... Belichick was willing to move off Brady after he won a Super Bowl with Garoppolo. Belichick, though, with an older Brady off a bad season, wanted Tom to re-sign with Jarrett Stidham there. Is it possible... Yeah. You saw him play, Joel. He's okay. He's average.
And remember, he was a transfer. You know, he started his career at Baylor. Not many people remember that. And remember how hard you've been on our boy, the first pick, Joe Burrow, for having to transfer away from Ohio State.
Yes.
But I will tell you this, that there is no secret sauce. And I think we attribute, as sports fans, in particular in the football arena, I think that we attribute way too much secret sauce to New England, right? I think a large reason why Tom Brady struggled is because Bill Belichick, the GM, failed him. Who did he have to throw to? Put his eggs in the basket of what, Antonio Brown? Like, you know, what are we talking about? So to a large extent, I think that people view New England and the quarterback position at New England through this lens that they're going to win 11 games and you know, almost make the playoffs regardless of what happened with Tom Brady because of what happened with him when he tore his ACL. Remember when Matt Castle won 11 games, they missed the playoffs, and it was like, oh my gosh, Bill Belichick's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and he might be the greatest coach of all time. But I will tell you, there's no secret sauce, and Bill Belichick would not have offered Tom Brady a contract, even if Tom Brady felt like that was a bit of a slight, if he felt like Jarrett Stidham was a better option. In no semblance of reality is Jarrett Stidham a better option at quarterback for the New England Patriots than Tom Brady, period.
You know, you have a baseball career and a football background. So I was saying earlier, there are athletes in my life that do things that are not explained. Russell Wilson never gets hit. You cannot explain it. Lamar does. Carson Wentz does. Mahomes does. Russell never gets hit. Mariano Rivera, one pitch. Nobody could hit it for 20 years. That's never happened in the history of baseball. When people have a special ability and we can't, it's not quantifiable, they become great. Dennis Rodman, best rebounder ever. Why? Skinny 6'7 playing against 7-footers. It makes no sense.
That's right.
I can't explain
right.
it. Tua, I believe, is the only quarterback in this class that does stuff that you can't explain. He's innate. That there are instincts here. He's not the biggest. His arm is okay. He's not a great athlete. And he's the number one high school quarterback. He comes in as a freshman. He's great. When I see special, all bets are off. That's all. Most of the great athletes, they're special. So I think I can explain Burrow and Justin Herbert and Jordan Love. I can't explain Tua. Does that make any sense? Am I just whiffing here?
I think you're whiffing. But I love Tua as a player. You know that. You and I have talked about Tua extensively. I think he is a brilliant player. There's no doubt. His biggest flaw, as I've told you before, is that he thinks he's more elusive than he is. He actually thinks he's Russell Wilson when he's not. And he does get hit. And he does get wrapped up from behind, which causes the ankle injuries, which he's had two surgeries on. It caused the hip fracture. So that's concerning to me. Now, his play from the pocket is uncanny. It's fantastic. I love his quick delivery. He's smart. He knows where to go with the football. I would say that he and, to a large extent, Joe Burrow as well, I mean, they got to throw to some unbelievable players. Maybe the best wide receiver on Alabama's team wasn't even available in the draft, and they still had a couple of guys go in the first round from a wide receiver standpoint. So he certainly was a benefactor of having great players around him. I will tell you this, though, that I don't believe that there's a quarterback, even Joe Burrow, who I'm so high on. You're explaining something that's like unexplainable, and I would call them independent contributors. It doesn't matter what's going on around them. They will come in and they will perform. I thought Andrew Luck was that level. I thought John Elway was that level. I thought Peyton Manning to a large extent was that level. In fact, you referenced my baseball career just quickly. I was in the Padres organization in the year 2000 and 2001. Tony Gwynn was still there. And one day in spring training, I got had the opportunity to sit at a table and have lunch with him and listen to Tony Gwynn talk about hitting. And I was looking across from him and I was like, nothing about this guy's physical stature would suggest that he's one of the greatest hitters in the history of the sport. And yet listening to him talk about the philosophy of hitting and pitch selection, the way that he approached each at bat, it was just a light bulb for me. Like, of course. His brain, his mind is why he's so great. Later that spring, actually, the Padres did a minor league deal with Ricky Henderson. If you go back, you'll check this out. He was in AAA for a big portion of that spring training. And Sean Burroughs was a third baseman at the time for the AAA team. He got hurt. His arm was sore. He was going to be down for a week. So they just said, hey, kid, from rookie ball, me, go play third base and bat in Sean Burroughs' place in the lineup. So I hit second behind Ricky Henderson for a week in spring training in the year 2001. It was one of the most fascinating experiences of my life. In fact, he would constantly look back at me before he went up to bat as I was walking to the on-deck circle. And Colin, he would be like, 2, 3. And I was like, what is Ricky Henderson telling me numbers about? And then I finally asked our skipper, Jeff Gardner. I was like, Gardy, why does Ricky keep telling me a number before he goes hits? And he goes, oh, hey, Rook, that's the number of pitches he expects you to take so he can steal second. I was like, oh, I've been out there swinging from my heels, not knowing what was going on. But it goes to your point. You talk about these innate contributors, the greatness that can almost not be measured. We're seeing it in The Last Dance. I saw it firsthand with Ricky Henderson and Tony Gwynn, watching Ricky steal bases well into his 40s, only because he knew how to. His first step was as powerful and as quick as I've ever seen. Tua is not that, right? I just don't think that he's an independent contributor yet. We haven't seen him go through a college football season unscathed from a health standpoint. So I think that there's some room for him to go and prove it out there in the NFL. He's got some great qualities, but I don't think that I'm going to sit here and say, like, hands down, he's got things that I can't explain, because I think that you can certainly get better if you're Tua.
Good talking to you, Clyde. I like hearing those old baseball stories. I mean, why don't you put a pipe in, you know, once in a while, and you just sit back on the porch, sip bourbon, and talk baseball stories with Joel Clatt. That's an idea for a hell of a podcast, to be honest with you.
How about that? Ricky Henderson stealing second base while I'm swinging from my heels. He probably was like, who is this? Like, get him out of here. A year later, I was at the University of Colorado.
Joel Clatt, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Joel. Appreciate that.
See you, bud.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
By the way, I've said this during this pandemic, that strong people are needed, necessary. Vince McMahon, Dana White, Roger Goodell, NFL. You got to push back. Joy and I have talked about this before off air. There are people that are lonely, sad, isolated, that go to social media and they're just negative. They wake up Saturday morning screaming at people. You give them good news, they turn it into bad news. You know, you got to be careful about it. You know, busy, successful people mostly don't wake up bitter on Saturday morning. Social media is full of it. And so I am here to defend people who I think we need strong people in this virus. I think Roger Goodell is strong. I think Vince McMahon is strong. And Dana White is strong. And I don't think the UFC event was probably perfect, but it's one of the best cards ever. They did a good job. You cannot be paralyzed by this virus. It's just something we're managing. By the way, the New York Times had an op-ed today where they acknowledged, the New York Times acknowledged, in their op-ed, young, healthy Americans have a fatality rate similar to that of the seasonal flu. Spend more time outside. That's the New York Times. They went on to say, we can't stay in our houses. There's a lot of context here in terms of mental health issues. Get outside, get some sun. Let's slowly open it back up. Let Americans live. That's the way we have to do this thing, just not hide from it. So even the New York Times. But the New York Times also, Dana White, who I've defended and criticized from time to time, he responded colorfully to a recent New York Times article criticizing the UFC for not practicing enough social distancing in their post-fight interviews last weekend.
There was an article in the New York Times today that was very critical of the execution.
That guy. I don't give a what that guy thinks, what he has to say, or what he writes. Good for him. He's pulling good traffic.
Do you not worry about the
I don't give a
fair enough.
Don't give a
I love that. You cannot be consumed with how the media, they're not experts on any of this stuff. The media's experts? How many epidemiologists? Even our epidemiologists don't have the answers here. Here's what's going to win. Strong leadership, not consumed with blowback, socially distance as much as possible. But Dana White is right. He doesn't give a blank. And if you run a league, you can't be concerned about what media says. You do your best. You go in. You try to be safe. We're talking about the world's best athletes. The fatality rate is tiny. And, you know, if you're not comfortable with some blowback on this stuff, this is why Adam Silver, about a week ago, finally came to terms with it. Adam Silver was, close it down, stay away. And about a week ago, he went, no, I'm watching the NFL. You got to deal with some blowback on this. There are people that are negative. This is scary. I get it. It's awful. But I appreciate Dana White pulling off an all-time great card. It was a great card in the face of this thing. And it's going to take more of this kind of resilience to battle it.